Folks, what a time, what a time to be alive. I am saying this, I am excited. Why? Because this is episode number 184 of YWC Football Talk. This is also the first ever time, this has been something that's been in the works for all summer now. Myself, Griff, is live in conjunction with UFF Sports. I will update the bio so you guys can find them out. Follow them on Twitter, guys. They've been tweeting myself all day long. They're great folks. And you know what's even better than a live segment? You know what's better? Do you want to know what's better? Having a OG guests team coming off one of the most impressive monkey off the back victories. It's Danny Dimes Primetime Episode 4. It's also Dolphins 3-0.
Let's do it.
The fish are cooking. The fish are good. I'm going to put the graphic up. I'm going to mute myself and let you relish in this victory. I'm sorry, but I'm doing it. I know this has been a long time coming for you, but folks, Big Rat, the floor is yours.
Let's do this because there's a lot to talk about with my quarterback, with my coach. I was told – I was this week in particular, I was starting to read a lot of Bills Mafia content because ever since we had Greg on the show a couple months, I think about a month back, where us three were doing the show together, I started looking at Cover One and I started looking at what a lot of Bills fans were saying on Twitter. I've gotten myself involved in some fights with them over the last few weeks. And repeatedly, we were told with McDaniel, and I get where they're coming from because I've done it to them as well, especially when Josh Allen was early in his career. McDaniel's a weird guy. McDaniel's a strange guy. You know, what happens if they have to face adversity? What happens if the team isn't playing as well? Is his quirkiness, is that going to resonate the same way with the rest of the roster? Which clearly for two straight games, they faced a lot of adversity in both games and won both of them. So a lot of that I want to throw away already. Then we were told with Tua, the constant goalpost moving on this guy drove me insane. For his entire rookie year, it was he will never even look down the field. He won't even try. He won't even at least take a chance. He doesn't even give it a shot, right? And then he starts throwing it down the field, and it's like, okay, if he does that, he's going to throw interceptions. He's going to throw incompletions. Then he's completing 50-yard passes with regularity, and now it changes to, well, these passes are not 100% in stride. The ball's a little bit behind Tyreek. I heard that about the fucking Ravens game when one of the Tyreek touchdowns was a little bit behind him, even though they scored a 50-yard touchdown on the play. Like, what is this bullshit, this absurd goalpost moving garbage from people that are very upset, usually a lot of Bills Mafia fans and Jets fans that are upset that the Dolphins are rising in the division. Constantly the narrative is changing, constantly. With this Bills game, they were 6.5-point underdogs in this game at home. And I've been telling you on the show for 2 years that their home field advantage is underrated. I've noticed it. All that narrative about the Dolphins, they don't show up on time. They don't fill that stadium. I'm sorry, you have not been in a Dolphins game the last 2 years. Even if it's not full by kickoff, and I will concede that's probably still the case that at 1 p.m., it's still a largely empty place. I promise you, if you've been to a game there in the last 2 years, late in the fourth quarter, that place gets loud. Every beat writer said that the Bills Mafia, which usually has a road takeover, they're usually very loud in that building, it was not the same in this game. Yes, they were loud. Yes, there were moments where the Dolphins were on third down on offense, and you can hear the Bills road crowd make noise. But the Dolphins home crowd fought back. Josh Allen had to take a timeout on a third down because the noise was too much for him, and he couldn't get the playoff to the rest of the offense. That's not something that was happening 5 years ago. So all this 6.5-point underdogs. And then the narrative was, can they even compete? Can they at least make it a game, much less win? Can they at least compete and put up a fight? And then the Dolphins actually win the game. And what is this narrative? I see it in a lot of places. I saw it from Rex Ryan today. I saw it from Stephen A. Smith today. Well, they got significantly outgained in yardage. The Bills missed a field goal. Like, who says the Dolphins are a better team than the Bills? And that was not the point. That was not what everyone was saying a week ago. It was never about proving, are they a better football team? It was just proving, can you compete with them? And are you capable of beating them at home? Everyone agrees that they're still the better team. I recognize that when they go to Buffalo in December, they're probably going to lose. They're probably going to be underdogs in that game too. But why is the narrative shifting again? Why was the burden now that the Dolphins had to prove that they were the clear-cut best team in football, which is basically what people were talking about, when this Bills team, everyone said, was the 2007 Patriots? I heard that in a few places. They might not lose a game this year. It's highest point differential in the NFL the first 2 weeks by a mile. And then the Dolphins beat them. They deserved to beat them. They never had the ball. They only had, I think, 7 or 8 drives. And on those 7 or 8 drives, they got 3 touchdowns. So consistently, they moved the ball. As of today, I checked, the Dolphins are still 3rd in the NFL in yards per play on offense. Only the Ravens and the Eagles are ahead of them. So yes, this is an elite offense. They did not have a lot of drives. Yes, there were some times where they went 3 and out. Generally, it's an explosive offense. It's an offense that every time they were in the red zone, capitalized with a touchdown, which the other team did not do. They got a 4th down stop. They missed a field goal. They were in a short field goal situation at the end of the half, and they couldn't get the clock off. They were not efficient in the red area. We were. That's why we deserved to win that game. They turned it over. We did not. Josh Allen had a strip sack in his own territory, and we scored off of it. We did not turn the ball over once. Repeatedly, I've heard from Bills fans and other fans around the country, Tua threw a pick 6 to Matt Milano that was dropped. That is true. Not denying that. Josh Allen had 4 dropped interceptions in that game as well. Several on that last drive, even before that red zone stop that they got. Numerous times, he had a Brandon Jones has a ball bounce right off his face in the first half. Like Jamal Adams style. He's coming off the corner to get it, and it just bounced right off his face mask. Javon Holland had a drop pick. Xavier Howard had a drop pick in the end zone. We don't bring that up, but the drop pick 6 that Matt Milano had on Tua, that counts because it's proof that the Dolphins were not the better team, even when that was not the point that everyone was saying the previous week. So yes, this team has constantly shut people up. And I know what's going to happen if they lose on Thursday. And look, on 4 days rest off an emotional division win where the defense played 90 plays, they're underdogs for a reason. And if they lose, people are going to use it to discredit them. And they're not going to get any of the sympathy that everyone threw against them. Because the Ravens, their secondary was beat up. They had too many injuries in the secondary. The Bills, same thing. Too many injuries in the safeties. Hyde and Poyer didn't play. None of it counts. But if the Dolphins on 4 days rest off 90 plays in the first game against the best team in football, are they going to get any of that respect if they lose? Is anyone going to give them any of that courtesy? Or is it going to be more excuses, more complaining, more not accepting that this is one of the best teams in the league, which they are? I am not saying they're better than the Bills. I'm not saying they're going to win the AFC East. I'm not saying they're going to win the Super Bowl. But I'm tired, Griff, of the narrative always changing. And that is my 6-minute rant to open the show. 3-0 Dolphins. All the haters can go kick rocks.
But this is why it was like I messaged you yesterday at like 5 o'clock saying, I love that you're coming on, but I hate you're going on. I say I love it because I knew you were going to bring the smoke. You're going to bring the passion, but I hate it because like it's a divisional rival thing. That's all. Now, look, yesterday you guys take the onus of being the only Victory Monday team in the AFC East. You guys are 3-0. You're the cream of the crop right now. I know this is a crazy take, but if I had to pick coach of the year, you got to go with McDaniel. Like he just – we talked. We didn't get to talk after the Bill. We talked a bit on Twitter, but he threw a lot of just interesting wrench schemes in the game against the Patriots because that's the game I mainly paid attention to. But you could tell his influence was quickly founded. And I even found that out too throughout the Baltimore game and the Buffalo game. It's just this team doesn't have quit in them. When I feel like past Dolphins teams would have quit and say the game against Baltimore or even yesterday, who knows what happens. The only thing I'll say too is, and I know this comes as a homer take. The Patriots only scored 13 points against that offense. That's the only thing I'm going to say. So just to credit my guys for a second, but with your guys, you get to do all that. I'm going to say this too, because obviously there was that one video surfacing of like the one Bills fan, the one Dolphins fan, saying like Bills fan, like go home, enjoy the flight home, losers. Like, yeah, like some fans have to learn how to celebrate properly.
Sure.
But for Bills Mafia, you guys have to learn how to handle defeat because I've been saying this all offseason. And I'm going to say this right now as a bold, bold take. The fact that they are bad in one-score games is something to be very, very cautious about. That's like I know, obviously, hey, look, the double-digit wins are great. You got to win by single digits in the playoffs. You're not going to smoke everyone in the playoffs. Look, what happened in the wild card last year for them? That was something that's been bottling up for 12 years. But here's the thing. And I'm going to say this, and I know it's going to sound salty. You gotta win those 1 point. If you're in the Bills fan, you gotta win those like you know shootout games. You have to win games like yesterday. So that's what I'm trying to say. There are some Dolphins fans you have to learn how to celebrate, but for Bills fans, you gotta learn how to lose because you know what? You guys weren't gonna waltz to a Super Bowl. Now, with that being said, we have the attention here because we're watching Danny Dimes in primetime. Hopefully not for the last time. We're live on Twitch today. We've got Randy here who's ready for the stats. Woo! I'd call this episode Ready for the Stats if I would, but you know what? We're Danny Dimes primetime. It's the gimmick. We're staying with it. But I'm going to say this right now, too. Dolphins, +2.5. There's something about it that makes me want to take them. But at the same time, too, I don't know if the Bengals are good or if the Jets are bad.
Yeah, I had the – I'm in a pickup contest with one of my good friends. And in this pickup contest, like in a lot of these games, you have to pick like 5 or 6 lines. In this one, though, you have to rank them like by highest confidence, which lines Ooh. You like the most. And the one that we put as our top line this past week was Bengals -4.5. Because it just – like the Jets are bad, definitely. And the Joe Flacco thing against the Browns was nice and all, but he's not going to do that every week, especially since a lot of his production came in like the last 2 minutes of the game. And the Bengals, there's a truism in the NFL that I love, and you can capitalize it on a better this past weekend. The 0-2 desperation spot. It is yep. very, very, very profitable. You saw it with the Colts. You saw it with the Titans. Now, granted, they were playing another 0-2 team, but they were a lot of people thought the Raiders were the better team.
We'll get to them, and we'll get to that game in a minute.
And so the Bengals being 0-2 against the Jets, and the Jets, you know, defensively, the Jets had a lot of problems last year. They've had problems this year so far. It just seemed like the Bengals had too much talent not to win that game comfortably. And so I do agree the level of competition is adjusted for your impression of the Bengals. As it relates to this Thursday, look, it is in theory a schedule loss for the Dolphins. They are beat up. They are 3-0. The defense – Javon Holland was interviewed by Peter King.
Going on the road.
Yeah, going on the road. And Javon Holland told Peter King after the Bills game, like, he was exhausted. They played 90 plays. He was cooked. And now you're asking him to go on a short week on the road against what we think is a good team. You know, that's tough. There is a chance Teddy Bridgewater plays in this game too, which Dolphin fans, I think, like, what was so frustrating in the summer. Like, let's not forget there were a lot of people that said that Teddy might play over Tua. I heard that repeatedly in the summer, and we don't hear that anymore. But I'm not going to let those awful takes in the summer go away. They deserve to be punished for that bad opinion. But furthermore, Teddy kind of had a bad training camp with the Dolphins. He was bad in training camp. He was bad in preseason. Some of the experienced Dolphins beat writers thought that seventh-round pick Skylar Thompson was actually outperforming him, even though obviously he was going against the third unit, so it's not quite as fair as Teddy going against the second units. But a lot of Dolphins writers thought Skylar looked better. Now, McDaniel's not crazy enough to make Skylar Thompson the backup because he still has never played in a regular season game. Teddy has won games as a starter. Teddy has a lot of experience in the NFL. Like, no matter how they looked, you had to make Teddy the backup. You just had to. But he had a very bad summer, and he did not look good in that one drive. It was just one drive. But that drive that Tua went out in the two-minute drill, Teddy looked so bad. He looked so lost. And you're not going to get him a full week to prepare. You're only – if he does start, he's only going to start on 3 days prep. Like, it's not like – Cooper Rush, for example, he comes in for Dak in that Bucs game. And the next week they play the Bengals. And Kellen Moore said, we have to get Cooper Rush as many reps as possible this week. And they had a full week. And they said, we need to give Cooper Rush as many reps as possible to get ready for that Bengals game, right? And that's 7 days of practice. This would only be a short week, so it's just a really tough ask. If Teddy plays, I would love to be wrong. I just have a hard time seeing them not getting rocked if Teddy's the quarterback in that game. And if Tua plays, they could still lose. So Dolphins 2.5 is spicy. Don't count them out. Like, they've been resilient. They've been underdogs in 2 of the last 3 games. They're 3-0 against the spread, one of the only teams in the league that is. Not even the Eagles are 3-0 against the spread because they didn't cover week one. So
shout out to Trey.
So, you know, I can understand not wanting to fade the Dolphins, but, you know, just empirically, I can tell you rationally as a fan, this is a schedule loss. If they win this game, they might be the one seed in the AFC because their next 5 games after this are like the Jets, the Steelers, the Texans, the Browns, like the Vikings, I guess, but it is at home. But that's their next games after this game. If they win this game, they could start 8-0. They really could.
You know what? Those are the games more than this Thursday. It's those games that you got to win. But before I get into that, I just got to give a quick shout out to the man who started all this because he's in our Twitch stream. Remember, we're with UFF Sports Night, so we're live on YouTube, we're live on Twitter, but we're also live on Twitch for the first time ever. Andy McNamara, cheers to you too, buddy. But here is the big thing that I am going to look at with this Dolphins squad. Can you win the games that you're supposed to win? Can you – that Sunday night Pittsburgh game, that could be a trap. I know the Brian Flores stuff, which now on paper, woof, not on. That does not look like a good Sunday night football game at all. But, you know, it's those games. It's the – can you win those games? I'm going to get to 2 quick questions because mainly this is a you thing, obviously. And also, quick score update, folks. It is 3-0 Dallas Cowboys at the moment. Cowboys got a field goal. I need a Thibodeau and a Parsons sack to win some coin tonight. And also, we will get into some updates on the Fantasy Football League. It's something I've been slacking on. But before we go down those rabbit holes, I want you to answer Randy's questions. And?
Well, yeah, the Dolphins were underrated before this past week. 6.5 at home was crazy, man. Like, I understand that the Bills had won 7 straight, but the Bills were really beat up on the injury report. Like, all the sharp bettors in Vegas were on the Dolphins. Even if they were going to lose, 6.5 at home, when, again, as I've told you for 2 years, their home field advantage is underrated, especially that Sunday night game, which I do agree can't be trappy because, especially since T.J. Watt might be back by that game too, because that game's in late October. So that's also kind of scary.
October 23rd, yes.
But I promise you guys this, Sunday night at the Hard Rock, that's going to be a great crowd. That's going to be that crowd will come across on television, and Steelers fans travel. Everyone knows that. So they'll show up for that game too as well. But yes, I think they were underrated. I think now they're starting to get properly rated. I kind of resent still. It just seems like I heard and this is not everyone. I don't mean to overgeneralize, but a lot of ESPN last week saying the Ravens were injured in the secondary, and a lot of people today saying they were outgained. Matt Milano dropped a pick 6. Like, it just feels like some people are still kind of slow to accept it. But I think generally they're starting to get a little bit more of the respect they deserve. They're a playoff caliber team. I know that, you know, pending injuries, obviously, which is the caveat for everything. Pending that, they're a playoff caliber team. They showed they can compete with the top contenders in the league. Can they, like, actually, like, make a Super Bowl run? I mean, we're not ready for that. That's unknown territory for me. So I think they're rated nationally. And then so it was controversial. People kind of saw him get groggy. It got scary. It looked like concussion symptoms, etc. What happened was his back was hurt. That's what he says. His back locked up, and that's why he got all wobbly on his legs. The independent neurologist, and so people need to remember, it's an independent neurologist assigned by the NFL, not by the Dolphins team doctors.
No, it's a league thing.
Who does the neurology checks. And the independent, yes, he was given a concussion test because the independent neurologist saw what we all saw, and they thought, oh, that's a sign of a concussion. And Tua was saying, and I remember watching this because I was there at the game. You could see Tua on the field. Like, he was, like, fighting it because he was like, he was trying to tell him, it's not my head. It's my back. I promise you I'm fine. But if you want me to do the concussion test, I'll do the concussion test. He does the concussion test. He clears it. He's not even in concussion protocol this week. Like, that's the thing that people really need to understand. If they were like, if concussion symptoms had reemerged and they illegally put him back in the game against his health, why is he not in the protocol at all this week? The concern this week is his back locked up in that game. And you know how it is. You take a bunch of hits. You wake up the next day. Adrenaline wears off. Maybe your back's not feeling the same way. So because it's a short week, it's possible the back is what keeps him out. But he passed the concussion protocol. He's not in protocol this week. It's an independent neurologist. I understand that the internet is so cynical all the time, and we have to assume, oh, corporate America, capitalist NFL, like risking player health and player safety. It was an independent neurologist. The independent neurologist did their job. I think everything's fine. I don't think they're going to get in trouble for this. I don't think he has a head problem. I think he just has a back issue, and we'll see if he plays on Thursday. But, you know, I think the controversy was a little overstated. And Mike McDaniel made a good point. Like, people said the optics are bad. So what's he supposed to do? Like, his guy passes the protocol. His guy tells him it's his back. But no, he has to bench him for the second half in a must-win game because the internet will look weak. It'll look bad on the Dolphins if they put him back in, even though he cleared all the medical personnel. What's he supposed to do? I'm going to bench my quarterback because that way the internet won't get mad at me? That's ridiculous.
So it's the same thing with very relatable to this podcast. It's like booking wrestling. Oh, yeah, if one booking decision the internet's mad at, or if one they're good at. It's such a double standard where everyone online thinks they're a doctor. It's like the same people, too, who I'm going to do a mean twist on it with the Pats, but how people see the Mac Jones ankle injury, which thank God it's not as severe. I think they're just trying to see right now, what does he want to do? What does the team want to do? Everyone kind of meets at a neutral road, or meets halfway. But how people were kind of going on and be like, oh, it's bad, it's bad. No, the one thing I've learned being a football fan over the years is that it's when an injury doesn't look severe is when it's worse. Look at Rashawn Slater. It didn't look like anything much. He's got a torn bicep or tricep, one of the two, but he's out for the season. That's a huge blow for that Chargers offensive line, which if you want to talk about a team, caveat being healthy.
Yeah.
Yeesh, sorry, Chargers fans.
Every year, but, too. It's so sad. Like, it's the same story every season with them.
It's the same story. But that's the thing. These people are independently contracted. It's the same thing for every sport. They're hired by the league, no matter the sport. NHL has them. I'm going to say that because I also cover hockey, too, for the Dean Blundell Network.
which this podcast is also available on now, folks. So you can stream it wherever you want. We're almost getting to episode 200. But they will, if they see something they do not like, they will call the independent neurologist. They will tell, or the neurologist will call down and say, get him out. They send him to the quiet room. If they determine he's fine, he's fine. I'm not going to read too much into it. I know some people were kind of jarring at it or whatnot, but at the same time, too, it is what it is. I'm also going to quickly answer Randy's question. I think he's going to – I don't want to know. It's tough. I think he should have surgery, but I don't know if he's going to have surgery. I think he's going to try to tough it out, but I think he should have surgery. That's my take on it.
And I know this can kind of transition to a top hold another topic altogether, but I did want to ask you what I asked Charlie on Twitter. Are you fine just going with Hoyer, or do you want to get a new quarterback if he's going to be out for like 3 games or whatever?
I'd rather just stick with Hoyer. I feel like if you go out of organization and bring someone in, it reeks of desperation. Look at Carolina last year bringing in Cam Newton. It's just one of those things where it what good does it do to the team? I know Brian Hoyer's not the best. I think we see Bailey Zappe at some point. For folks who aren't aware, I will be at the Patriots-Lions game week 5, my first ever Patriots game in Foxborough next Sunday, week 5. You have no idea how excited I am. That's why. And also, folks, for a little bit of a spoiler of what's to come next week for week 5, to get you ready for Jets and Dolphins, we'll be joined by the one and only Dan Goes Ham. But we have another person from the YWC chiming in right here. If it's more, I think with the Hoyer take, you got to see what you got. So I think he starts the Green Bay game, but if either he looks like crap or if they get blown out, like say if it's like 45-10, if it's ugly, I think you got to see what the kid's got. You can't just let Bailey Zappe sit there and do anything. If anything, I think they bring on someone from the practice squad as like, you know, like what the, like for example, what the Niners just did because of the Trey Lance injury and now Jimmy Garoppolo starting, which the forward pass got set back about 40 years ago last night. Let's just say that.
The encouraging thing, I guess, for you guys as fans is that some of those games in that stretch, like specifically the Jets and the Bears, are very easily games that the defense can win by themselves. You could totally see Zach Wilson or Justin Fields having 2 interceptions in those games, giving you guys a short field. You know, Damian Harris has 100 yards rushing. Like, it's easy to see them win those games, even with limited quarterback play. Now, the Lions, that might be trickier, but we'll see.
That Monday night football game between the Bears and the Patriots, I'm going to apologize for it in advance because that is going to be Big Ten football at its finest. It's going to be like 13-10. It's going to be like the Bills-Pats Monday night or last year, but minus the weather. The game we were looking to target at if Mac does go for surgery is the second Jets game, which then brings into the tough stretch. And for those folks out there who say the Patriots are irrelevant anymore, well, guess what? Thanksgiving primetime. Buffalo primetime, Arizona Monday Night Football, Raiders Sunday Night Football, which when that Week 15 Raiders Sunday Night Football happens, Saturday at 4:30 or 8:15, it's going to be Dolphins and Bills. You've heard it here first. Matthew Bovee is Buffalo beat reporter. He was saying that that's probably going to be that game could fit in there because I know it's in one of those like, hey, we may flex it in, we may not.
Yeah, unless Tua or Josh Allen gets a season-ending injury, which, knock on wood, obviously.
Yeah.
Unless that happens, I can't see how that's not flexed in because the teams will have good records.
I'm gonna go to my score app for a quick second because I want to look and see the TBD games, which are it doesn't say right here, but there's a bunch of them. I know that are listed, but like none of the options are good in comparison to what like could be. So one of those primetime games should be Bills and Dolphins. It should be like, you know what? Because at that point of the season, you're probably gonna have both teams fighting for playoff rankings. I'm gonna go back to Randy for a second because we're gonna go back to Thursday night football. I like the game. I think that Cleveland is not as good. It's not that they're not as good. I think it's just that facade where it's like, you know, hey, we beat the Panthers. We beat a Steelers led by Trubisky. They're probably gonna beat the Falcons.
Lost to the Jets.
They lost to the Jets though. They're gonna be that team that fucks a lot of people when it comes to betting. Believe me, I've been there. My mother, and the public were on that under Thursday night, 38. You couldn't cover it. Like, come on, guys. But then with that game, we're going to see a world where we get Joe Flacco versus Mitch Trubisky on Sunday. Danny's going to punch a hole through a fucking wall.
Yeah, because I saw, like, I think Jets fans had said that they were hoping Zach would be back this week. But Robert Saleh, and like, I just – I know what Danny's going through, kind of what you're going through, because I went through this last year with Tua, missing two stretches of games at different times in the beginning of the year and in the middle of the year. And both your quarterbacks now, unfortunately, are going through something similar. Robert Saleh's comments today, like saying he's got 24 to 36 hours to clear by medical. Maybe he will, but I first saw like the way he kind of said those words, and I was just like, it just seems like the kind of thing where if it's close, they'll lean against doing it, which is counterintuitive because you want to develop the kid, obviously. But the hard reality is it's a high-pressure market. Robert Saleh's playing for his job, and maybe part of him thinks against a veteran like defensive staff like Pittsburgh, maybe it's better for me to just have Flacco in there. I'll feel more comfortable. Whether that's right or wrong, I know Danny like said he can't watch Joe Flacco anymore. It's over with. But that's the kind of concern that you would have. So hopefully Zach Wilson can go. But yeah, that's going to be an uncomfortable game. And Steelers-Browns, I mean, the Browns are weird because I'm not a Jacoby believer at all. But I will admit that team is better than I thought it was. Like the offensive line has been playing well. Amari Cooper's been great. David Njoku had his freaking breakout game last week. And what's his name? Nick Chubb is like he's always awesome, but he's like the best running back in football right now. Like it's a whole nother level. It's like going from like fringe Pro Bowler to like what Derrick Henry's been doing in Tennessee the last few years. Like that kind of is a game changer. And it has been against bad competition. The Browns are averaging like 26 points a game, though. Like at some point. That's why this week is kind of interesting, because the Falcons, another team that people don't really respect, they're also averaging like 26, 27 points a game. So, you know, kind of might be a little fun, little weird meh quarterback shootout there this weekend. So we'll see how that one goes.
We'll see how that one goes there. I'm just going to bring in a couple fan comments. Also, too, we have Nightmare 10 Phil on the screen who has to ask you back on the show at some point. Japandre _ UFF giving us a quick shout out on Twitch as well. But I think this is going to be closer than people think, even with Hoyer. The way that the Packers – I'm going to get this into this on Wednesday. I'm also going to be announcing this now. I'm doing something monthly where I'm going to recap how the Pats did that in a month. So yeah. I believe on Wednesday, guys, Pats POV McGarvin will be coming back on the show as we're going to get you ready for week four, but we're also going to look at the Patriots season. I'm going to give a quick take with Sunday's Patriots-Packers game. I think it could be close, but at the same time, too – I just look at it where I'm like, it's Aaron Rodgers, it's Lambeau. This is like, I already had this as a schedule loss. Like I had yesterday as a schedule loss. It's going to happen. I think the Steelers are going to do it because I think this Sunday's game, if it's Flacco and Trubisky, it's going to be ugly. There's a chance they get their asses kicked if it's Trubisky versus Allen in Buffalo. I know Trubisky is kind of like the welcome son coming home, but that game just reads ass whooping all over it.
Yeah, I'll comment on both. Like the Green Bay thing, one, the Packers offense is not that explosive right now. So you can definitely see a world where like Ryan Hoyer has the ball, you know, down 17-7 with 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
Like the Chiefs 29 game a couple years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Something like that where, okay, yes, it's Lambeau, but the Packers offense struggles to score more than 20 points because, to your credit, they did play the Dolphins offense better than the Bills defense did. I know the Bills defense had their injuries, of course, but Mike McDaniel said all week that Leslie Frazier and Sean McDermott, and they kind of said this too, it's very much like a system defense. Like when they play as much cover two as they do, and they have, and Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano are incredibly athletic linebackers, and they can have those guys go out in coverage all the time, which most teams can't do with their linebackers. So, those guys played, and their edge players played. I know their D tackles didn't play, but Von Miller and Greg Rousseau played, and they both made an impact. Greg Rousseau had some really, really impressive sacks in that game. So it's still kind of the point is it's a well-schemed defense, and the Patriots still did a better job defending against us than that Bills team did. And so you can, you know, see a world where they kind of limit the Packers' weapons here and there. The defense has played fine. Lamar Jackson let you guys up, but he lets everybody up. And his yardage wasn't overwhelming. He just kept scoring in the red zone all the time. And he put up more points against my defense than he did against yours. So I think that's a cause for hope, like the Chiefs game you said. And Steelers, I think it's pretty easy. You have them play the Jets. You play Trubisky against – because I think after the Bills, they play the Bucs, right? So you feed Trubisky against those two opponents. And then when they probably lose both games, or at least the offense looks bad both games, then you can go to – Kenny Pickett, because you don't want to start Kenny Pickett against that Bucs defense right now. Like, I don't think that's a good idea.
No, the Buccaneers, I still think yesterday was just – I know I was on Tom Brady just because I was – and I'm always in that camp of
course.
Whenever you doubt him is when he surprises and beats you. I just think yesterday there was just some like little, it was like the little things here and there where you look at it and you're like, oh boy, that does not look good for them.
And no Mike Evans was like a deal. Like they could not recover from that. Like that was just an absolute deal breaker. Like with Godwin's injury, with Julio Jones apparently tore his PCL over the weekend. Like Mike Evans, like their offense just couldn't function. Their defense, and I know the competition hasn't been great. They're averaging 9 points per game allowed right now, the Bucs defense. That's crazy. That's like, you don't even see Iowa do that, like in college football. Like that's unreal. So that will give them a chance in every game, including this weekend.
Before we get to any other topics, I do have the Week 15 TBD games, courtesy of NFL.com. Besides Dolphins Bills, you can either go with Ravens Browns, Colts Vikings, Falcons Saints, Giants Commanders. If you're asking me which two to put in there right now, I'm going to go Vikings Colts because it's a cool interconference game, and then Dolphins Bills. That's Saturday Night Football right there.
Vikings Colts sounds like one of our favorite kind of games, like a playoff eliminator, even though it's interconference. But that's
loser leaves town.
Yeah, and it's kind of fun because they'll both probably be, you know, like 7-7, 8-6, you know, by that point. Maybe a game better or worse for one of the others. But the point remains, it'll be kind of like a fun, okay, who's going home? Who has a shot here?
And I'm just going to say this quickly, Phil, it's whenever Phil's available. I have to get in the DMs after this. I'm going to go to like what I said earlier about the Patriots game, about that as a whole yesterday. The Patriots defense is going to keep them in games. The Patriots defense, without Kyle Duggar yesterday, was a big blow. That's why Mark Andrews was able to go psycho mode and get 22 fantasy points and win for a lot of people. But Matthew Judon, Dietrich Wise Jr., guys like Jabril Peppers really stepping up. But Dietrich Wise and Matthew Judon on the line, my goodness, those guys are forces. Yeah. The Ravens, I'll be here to say it, they are a really good football team. They are really good. Like, for even two, there's just – my only thing with the Pats yesterday was they were afraid to tackle Lamar. And I noticed that a lot with a lot of these mobile quarterbacks, him, Mahomes, sometimes Allen, where he'll run around, but then he'll kind of back up. And you're going to go into lunge, but then you take that stutter step, you hesitate, and they just cut right by you. So that's what I noticed from that yesterday. But for as good as the Patriots can be, I think they can hang with teams. They're going to be their own worst enemy. They're going to be that if they lose games close, it's because they did something to shoot themselves in the foot.
They just seem I'm sorry to interrupt, but very respectfully, they seem like the kind of team that, you know, they'll consistently, whenever they played like they did against the Steelers, when they play the Jets, when they play the Bears, you know, obviously quarterback permitting, like that obviously changes things a little bit. They seem like the classic kind of team that when they play the Bills, they'll lose. When they play the Ravens, they'll lose. They played us, they'll lose. But they play those other, the middle of the conference teams, and they can like pretty consistently win those games. You can kind of see them doing what the Steelers did last year. I don't know if that excites you or not, but you can totally see them like just constantly taking care of business and out coaching teams and like winning by the skin of your teeth here and there and like limping your way to like 10-7, 9-8, or 9-7-1 and getting the 7 seed that way. Like doesn't that kind of feel like where this is going?
It does feel like that's where it's going, because I look at their schedule right now, I'm like, okay, if they're 1-3 after the Packers game, which is expected, 2-3, maybe 2-4, 3-3, because I'll say the Lions game, probably a win, also losing DeAndre Swift, that's something they'll look out for. Also going to say one thing about the Lions, quick, I want to point this out to you. Go look at what Jeff Okuda has done against his receivers in the first three games. Justin Jefferson, quiet. A.J. Brown, quiet. Terry McLaurin, like two receptions in the game. Jeff Okuda finally arriving on the scene, living up to his draft stock. Him, Malcolm Rodriguez, Aiden Hutchinson. If the Lions can get a decent quarterback next year, they probably can make the playoffs very, very soon.
And they're at that point where their offense, like what
their line is so underrated.
And what they did against the Eagles in week one needs to be reevaluated. Now that we saw how the Eagles defense shut down the Vikings, shut down the Commanders, like they could not move the ball. They could not do anything in either of those games. And the Lions dropped 30 points on them. Like I think, and the Lions have scored, they've scored, I think 24 plus in every single game. Like, yeah, because of their line and because of Swift. And I mean, I'm on Ross St. Brown who's freaking lighting it up every single week.
Yeah, Hawkinson.
Like they just, you're right. Like their offense has been very consistent, but Dan Campbell said this himself. Like now that they're kind of like everyone's darling team, you know, they were on Hard Knocks. They were charming. They were great against the spread last year. Everyone's really happy with their
3-0 right now against the spread too.
3-0 against the spread, but they gotta, they're getting to that point, kind of like where my Dolphins were at the start of the 2020 season. It seems very similar to me, where 2019, they like were the frisky tanking team that everyone loved. They're like, oh, they have a great plan. They're rebuilding the right way. This is adorable. This is great. They were hot down the stretch, right? And then they started the 2020 season 1-3. And you get to that point where you got to win these games now. Like, you can't – like, the moral victories only go so far. Like, they got to start, like, becoming a 500 team record-wise. And I think they can be. But we're going to have to see it pretty soon, like, within the next few weeks.
Yep, they also if they can go into Foxborough and, like, hang with the Patriots, I'll give them their props. If they can go into Green Bay and hang with the Packers, you have the Buffalo Bills coming in on Thanksgiving Day. If you can – cover against Buffalo and not get your ass kicked on national television, because I've said this before, I know the Lions, not a single primetime game in 2022, but you have a spot that's going to be one of the top five most viewed games of the year.
And isn't this like the most excited we've been for their Thanksgiving game in forever? Like, yes, Buffalo.
It's usually them and the Bears. Like, I can't get excited for that.
Now it's like, okay, the Lions are actually kind of fun to watch. Like, they've been playing well offensively. The Bills are obviously always interesting. So, finally, it's like, okay, I'm actually looking forward to that one for once.
Same here. But yeah, so I'm just going to say that. So that's for there. And then with the Patriots, if they can take care of business against the Bears, the Colts, and the Jets, part of me in the schedule is always thinking that they can, like, that they'll probably end up splitting with the Jets. But if they can sweep the Jets, which we'll get into their divisional play, which I still think if the Jets want to do something, you have to win at least one or two divisional games this year. If they could go into that Thanksgiving game at around 500 or even a game under 500, I think they're in a good sitting. If they're two games or more under 500, then they're in trouble. I'm going to go to Randy for a second because this is the easiest question he's ever asked. And it was last night, Broncos, 49ers. There's nothing good about it. It's like I said earlier, the game set the forward pass back 40 years.
The Broncos had 9 three and outs. 9. They were at home. And I know the Niners defense is great, but they couldn't move the ball against the Texans. They did move the ball against the Seahawks, but even that has to be reevaluated because the Niners lit up the Seahawks defense. The Falcons lit up the Seahawks defense. And the Broncos, sure, they got in the red zone a bunch. They had the goal line fumbles. That's obviously kind of bad luck. But still, at the end of the day, their 16 points against Seattle in a few weeks is going to look bad. It's going to be like, oh, that's actually like worse than everyone else did against that defense. And they have, I believe, I don't think they have the lowest point total in the league, but it's close because they cannot score right now. It's crazy. And the Niners have an excuse. You could believe it or not. I think it's kind of a middling excuse of like, oh, yes, Jimmy knows the system, but Jimmy hasn't been practicing with these guys for like 2 months, so he needs more time. Look, you'll vary. Some of you will think that's bullshit. Some of you will think that's meaningful. I don't really know where I stand on that. But the Broncos, like, they're not the only team that has a new coaching staff. My team has a new coaching staff. They're firing on all cylinders offensively right now. Other teams around the league, too. Like, the Ravens.
Minnesota.
The Ravens lost Hollywood Brown. They're scoring just fine. Philadelphia added A.J. Brown. They're doing just fine. Like, I don't think – with how much talent they have in the running back room, with Sutton, with Judy, with Albert O, like, it just should be better than this. I'm sorry. Like, it should not be this bad, even though it's early in the year. So what they did last night was abhorrent. They got lucky. You know, I was very pissed when they missed that two-point conversion because I got them on the spread, not the money line. And if the Niners had driven down and kicked the field goal to win that game, they would have won by 2 points and I would not have covered. So I would have been very, very, very upset. But thankfully, Jeff Wilson got us home with that fumble on the last drive to cash the ticket at the window. They're brutal to watch right now. They're brutal. Brutal.
So I want to ask you this. This Sunday, Broncos Raiders.
Yeah.
Is that a must-win game for either team? Because it sure feels like it.
It's definitely the Raiders, like, for sure. Obviously, they have the worst record in football right now. Isn't that crazy? There's not. Yes. It's also a reflection. This is the good thing, Phil. There's a lot of parity this year. Like, scoring is lower than it's ever been. Like, it's the lowest it's been in like 10 years or whatever. There's more 3-point games margin ever before. Every game is close. And you also have this dynamic where there's no really bad teams right now. Like, I think the Bears are a bad team and they're 2-1. You know, the Texans have been somewhat competent at 0-2-1. All three of their games were very close. So the Raiders at 0-3, that's the worst record in the league right now. They're the only 0-3 team in all of football, a playoff team from last year. So they cannot lose this game. They have to win this game. The Broncos, I think what's must for them is they have to look competent. The offense has to score 20 points. Like, they need to start putting it together, because after this week, you're 1/4 of the way through the season, and you still have all your other division games left. This is their first one this year.
So is it bad that the Raiders are favored in this game by 2?
And I think I'm going to take them this week. I really do, because it's a must-win spot for them. They almost won last week, but that was a must-win spot for Tennessee. And Mike Vrabel back against the wall, like, that's a really good – like, he's kind of like Mike Tomlin in that way. Like, when the team is counted out, ignored, like, us against the world, like, our season's on the line, that's usually when the Titans surprise you with a win out of nowhere. And I was on the Titans last week, so it didn't surprise me. But the Raiders, I thought, did decently to almost steal that game at the end. So I think they should be favored. I'm going to pick the Raiders to win. If you don't want to do it, I understand. But everyone out here, I gave you the Survivor League call of the Texans last year in week 1. I would consider the Raiders this week. No one is going to use them. You don't have to worry about burning them because you don't care about using them the rest of the year. And I really think there's a really good shot they win this game. They have to win this game. Their season's on the line. So Raiders, Survivor League. If you want to get frisky, this is your chance.
I got frisky yesterday, and I have a strike now. I picked the Texans to beat the Bears because I thought the Bears were shit. And
yeah, I mean, they don't throw the ball. They've completed less than 10 passes in 3 straight games, the Bears.
They have like 20 completed passes on the season.
It's unreal. Like, that's why your Patriots can beat them. Like, even with Brian Hoyer, like, your Patriots can handle that offense just fine.
The only thing with that they have going, though, is that Roquan Smith is one of the most underrated linebackers in football right now, and he's going to get paid handsomely.
Khalil Herbert also has been a monster backing up Montgomery. Montgomery got hurt yesterday, but still, Herbert's been a stud.
Who Andy McNamara, guest in YWC Football YWC Football Talk Fantasy Football League participant, knows. I said earlier this year, go draft David Montgomery. I did that. Now I'm paying for it. Randy, you know what? I did. I also said this too, that the AFC West wasn't going to be all glitz and glamour because you needed a team to suck. It happens every year. You're never going to see a world in the NFL where all 4 teams are firing on all cylinders. All 4 teams are just this unbelievable juggernauts. No. Every team is going to be disappointed. And I'm also going to answer this. I don't think he's going to be gone if they go 0-4, but if they miss the playoffs and go like 6-11 or 6-11 or 5-12, that talk's going to come up. And I also think right now, the only thing I'll say for Raiders fans, stop making excuses for Derek Carr.
Yeah. And they gave him an extension, but what was lost in that news reporting was that I believe the guaranteed money is off after this year. If they wanted to, they can move on from him after this year. And Davante Adams has less receiving yards on the season than Matt Collins right now. And I love Matt Collins. Like, I could have told you guys.
Yeah, how do you feel about that?
Matt Collins was awesome for the Dolphins last year. Matt Collins was a team captain for the Dolphins last year. So love Matt Collins fully. Love him with all my heart. But come on now. Like, let's get realistic here. He's the one to watch, because I think for McDaniels to get fired, it would have to be not Urban Meyer level bad, because there is no such thing as Urban Meyer level bad, but it would have to reach that area of wins and losses. It would have to be like 3-13. Like, I don't think he'd get fired off an 8-9 season or anything like
no.
that. No. But if they have a losing record, I think Carr, and if they have a losing record and they're picking at the top of the draft, Carr is the one to go, I think.
Yeah.
Because then they'll have an easy way to replace him.
I just don't think Carr's been the same either, too, since he had that MVP season where he broke his leg like on Christmas Eve. I just don't think he's been the same QB since then. It's always been the same thing. But also with the Raiders, too, because it's always – their defense is great now, but Chandler Jones has been a no factor. Max Crosby, who just got paid in the offseason, hasn't really done much. Their offensive line, not good.
Yeah, it's one of the worst in the league. And when Derek Carr had those MVP-type season back in 2016 and I'll give Carr credit. He did play a lot better last year, but – The line last year wasn't that great, but the line in 2016 was dominant when he was like really surging. And now it's struggling. And look, it is somewhat bad luck. Like that Cardinals game, how they lost that game is unreal.
They were scared to win.
The Cardinals, are quietly, after 3 weeks, if here's some stats for Randy, because I was looking at this earlier today, on yards per play, on offense, they ranked 27th out of 32 teams. On defense, they're dead last in yards per play allowed. They've played like the worst team in football over 3 weeks, and they beat the Raiders. So that was like a really concerning sign for Vegas for that reason. But they lost two close games. You know, you would think against this Broncos offense, like you talk about AFC West is not going to be as good as people think. Griff, like three of the four teams have been massive disappointments.
And
like,
lost to Jacksonville.
Yeah, they got killed. They got killed by the Jaguars, and they like everyone's on their injury report. Like Bosa's going to be out for like 4 to 6 weeks.
Slater gone for the year.
Herbert Staley even admitted that Herbert's fractured ribs aren't going to go away. That's going to be something he has to deal with every week. They might not do this because they're 1-2 and they don't want to accumulate more losses, but they really should accumulate consider playing Chase Daniel for a week just to give him a break, just to give him a reprieve, you know, and then maybe he'll be a little bit healthier for the following games. But they don't want to risk losing again, because if they lose again, now things are going to start to get dicey at 1-3. So, and the Broncos, like, they're 2-1, but their offense has been a disaster. Hackett is a national joke. Everyone makes fun of him constantly. And by the way, Hackett's play calling on that last offensive drive they had yesterday was horrible. Like, he has a one-point lead. Oh, he dropped it. He has a one-point lead, and on 3rd and 9, he runs it 3 straight times. They just made Russell Wilson one of the highest-paid quarterbacks in the NFL. I don't care how bad the offense has looked. They had just scored the previous drive. They had just found into a rhythm the drive before. And on 3rd and 9, he runs the ball when the Niners still had 2 timeouts. Like, it was mind-numbing. So that's the not-disappointing team that's not the Chiefs, is the Broncos. So that's why I think the Raiders are going to win this week. Like, I think too much going against Denver.
Yeah. I want to get into this because we did talk about this, and I want to ask you, it's part of the game I also want to play. Are they good or are they bad? And the first team I have is Jacksonville. I'm going to come on here. I'm not going to say – I don't want to label them good yet, just because obviously one of their wins was like a – like how New England beats Miami – or Miami beats New England every year, excuse me, in Miami, and how they beat the Colts in Jacksonville. I need Jacksonville to beat a team that's already established. Now, I'm not saying the Chargers aren't an established team, but I need them to beat, you know, like, you know what, let's do this. Let's pull out their schedule. I know I'm going there. They also go to Denver. They play Denver and London in a few weeks, which.
They play Philly this week.
What I mean. If they get ran out of the bill, if they get ran out of the gym by the Eagles, all this talk goes away.
This would be like a good time for them to like go to Philly and like lose by a touchdown, you know? Lose like 30-23, like enough, or even like 30-24, enough for everyone to be like, okay, you know, you covered, like, good job, like you're definitely still in the mix, like we can respect that, and then you go from there. I do think they still have work to do, but I do think what we've seen so far has been encouraging, because the Christian Kirk has played very well. Like I'm not saying he's worth $18 million, but man, I think some of us might have to start at least walking back our comments a little bit, because he's been really, really good, and the Cardinals' offense has badly missed him. I know Hopkins isn't playing, but still, they really could use Christian Kirk right now. So that is a really good sign for them and for how Jacksonville's played. Trevor looks great. He started this past week was the – I guess you saw a little bit in the Colts game, but really in that Chargers game, you kind of start to see Clemson Trevor. Like, it really like those plays he made on the run, like that's what he was famous for. Whenever he would leave the pocket and just fire a missile like down the field, like on the boundary, like some guys going out of bounds. Like, you started to see that. The coaching is obviously better. The defense looks good too. The defense,
Devin Lloyd.
And the Trayvon Walker and Josh Allen have one of the higher pressure rates in the league.
Best Josh Allen in the NFL.
Except when they play. When they play each other, he's the first. But other plays, he's the second. So I will say, I agree with you. They still have to prove it, but I don't think it's been fake what we've seen so far. This isn't like fluky, like winning by a field goal every game, like the team we're watching right now, actually. That one seems a little more illegitimate to me. The Jaguars, I think it's real. They have to prove it, but I think it's real.
Yeah. Also, too, I'm going to say this for this coming Sunday. If you are going to bet Giants versus Bears, go Giants, because they're going to be wearing their retro uniforms from the LT era 80s. They're winning in those uniforms. They're wearing their throwbacks tonight, which are my favorite uniforms. And there's Wink Martindale, and it looks like it's a whiteout tonight at the stadium, as there's also a lot of Cowboys fans there in a 6-3 game. But, yeah, that's my thing with Jacksonville. Just kind of like, you know what? Take it in stride and prove yourself. Like, if you can go and lose by a field goal of the Eagles, okay, you establish yourself. But, like, do you remember last year we were all kind of high on the Panthers because they were 3-0, and then they had that game against the Cowboys, and they hung tough, but then they lost, like, 10 of 11 down the stretch, which, fun Matt Rule fact, I want to get on the podcast. In games where teams score more than 17 points on the Panthers, he is 1-24.
That's a crazy stat. And there's another stat that when he has a fourth quarter comeback opportunity, when his team like has the ball down 7 or down 3, in those situations, he is like 1-16. Every time you see Baker Mayfield with the ball down a field goal, don't get your hopes up. Like, the stats say that they're going to throw an interception or give up a sack or something along those lines. And Baker, not that it's the best offense to play in, of course, Baker Mayfield, 32nd in the league right now in QBR. Dead last. And I only – look, Danny's going to shit on me because I use QBR to prop up Tua, who leads that stat, by the way. And he knows that I'm critical of that metric as a whole. But I only bring it up because I saw that stat floating around on the internet. I'm sure if I looked at Baker Mayfield's other stats, they would also be towards the bottom of the league. So it's just kind of one thing to prove a larger point.
That game this Sunday, Arizona going to Carolina, is going to be such a fucking weird game. Like, if I'm looking at that game, I look at an underscore. Give me 20-14 or something like that. It's going to be an ugly football game, but I think that's – favored. But here's the thing. I think that's a game where the Cardinals are a perfect spread opportunity there. I think that the Cardinals can kind of go in there and, it's that no one's expecting them to win. Carolina's coming off a win against a divisional opponent, even though I think it's not so much – I hate to do this, but I think it's the Saints shot themselves. The Saints lost that game more than the Panthers won the game. The Saints just made critical mistakes, missed field goals, fumbles by Kamara. It was just bad after bad. And going to the Saints quickly, I want to answer this question to Randy. When the Dallas Cowboys eventually lose in the playoffs and Mike McCarthy is fired, there will be a Brinks truck with a star on it backed up to his front yard and a blank check with Jerry Jones. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah, and I will say that, let's say for whatever reason, let's say, McCarthy goes to the Super Bowl, which is not going to happen. But, let's just say that, okay? If that were to happen, I still think Peyton, it just seems like he's not going to be out for a job for long. There's very few retirements where as the retirement is happening, you even have the coach doubling back on it. He outright said, yeah, maybe I'm just gone for a year. Who knows? He was very forthcoming about the fact that he absolutely is cool with coaching another team very soon. So if it's not next year, Randy, it'll be the year after. It won't be for long. At some point, he will be coaching somewhere.
Yeah, he'll be coaching somewhere. It's just a matter of where. But then that's the thing, too, with the Dallas Cowboys. I don't think we can write them off totally yet just because I don't think they're a Super Bowl team, but they're definitely going to be in the playoff mix, especially if I look at it right now with Dallas. I'm like, oh, as Danny is scrambling in the pocket, oh, where's he going to go? Oh, he runs out of bounds. When you look at some of the teams in the NFC, you're like, okay, yeah, they're as good as them. If I look at the playoff teams right now on paper, I'm only going to go the Rams of the West for obvious reasons because I still think, and before I go into anything, with Seattle, I think they're that team where everyone thinks, oh, week one Seattle's going to show up, and then we remember, no, this team's actually bad.
Yeah. It was a blip, a nice little blip in the radar that is completely forgotten. Falcons at home was maybe the easiest game left on their schedule. Literally, that was probably the easiest from now till the end of the season.
Detroit's a 6-point favorite. When the hell did we ever see that? The Lions are a 6-point favorite. It's not like it's 2 or 3. It's 6.
For a team that, whatever their record is, they're, I think it's, 4-14 in their last 18 games, and they're a 6-point favorite, which tells you what the market thinks of Seattle, unfortunately. Geno, the offense struggled in week 2, but that San Fran D is legit. That San Fran D, I believe they lead the NFL in yards per play allowed. They're number 1. So that defense is ferocious. But the offense has generally played fine. It's just the defense has so many young players. They're starting rookie cornerbacks, rookie safeties. They lost Jamal Adams for the year. Their pass rush has been hot and cold. So it just kind of when Geno has a bad game, they're going to get killed. And even when Geno plays well, they still might lose because the defense isn't good enough. It's really hard to go .500 with that formula, you know?
Their travel is also super wonky. They go to Detroit this week, then you go to New Orleans, then you're home, and then you go to LA, and then you go to you host New York, but then you go to Phoenix, but then you go to Munich to play the Buccaneers, and then you have your bye week, and then you have Raiders, Rams, Panthers, 49ers, Chiefs, Jets, Rams. That's you're right when you say that, where it's this past week was probably the last time where Seattle had a chance to win. And I'll say this right now. You know how you said in, was it 2020 or 2021, the Texans weren't going to be as bad as people think?
It was last year. It was last year.
The Falcons are this year or last year's Texans. Like, I still think they're going to be like a 4-13 team, but I just don't think they're as bad as people think.
No, they're competitive. Yeah, like
Drake London's impressive so far.
And Kyle Pitts has still not even scratched the ceiling. Cordarrelle Patterson, right? And look, maybe he'll get hurt because he is older and he has an injury history. He's on pace right now for, I believe, 1,800 yards from scrimmage for the season. Like, that's how productive he's been in a few games. They're scoring a lot. Mariota's like, even if you don't think he's a franchise quarterback, he's better than some of these other, like, bridge guys that a lot of teams play. Like, he's better than Joe Flacco, much better than Joe Flacco, for example. Like, yeah. Like, so I personally think he's better than Jacoby Brissett. I know Jacoby's playing fine right now, but I think he's on a little bit of a better environment than Mariota is, even though Mariota's offense is underrated. So I think the Falcons, even if someone out there, like last year's Texans that had like a good offense in December, it could also be like last year's Lions, you know, that they lost a lot of games, but they were always covering. They were always in those games. It was always a one score game in the fourth quarter, you know, something along those lines.
Yeah, exactly. It's always that, like, they're frisky. They're good. They're a 3-0 spread team right now, the Atlanta Falcons are. That's the thing. I know people say, oh, it's a spread, it's gambling. That's something to pay attention to. Remember, folks, 2020, the 1-15 Jags, 7-9 against the spread. You know also had a 7-9 spread record? The Kansas City Chiefs.
And the Jags, it was the second half of that season, too, where the Jags, like, from November and December, they were, like, 6-1 or something like that. And the Chiefs would never cover, like, towards down the stretch. Because the Jags weren't covering at first. And then that second half of the year, they would just always, like, they were projected to lose by 15 points, 12 points, 9 points. And they would always lose by a touchdown, like, consistently. Now, but I will say, before you get to that question, the one thing with Mariota, you've seen it in all three of their games. They have an incredible knack to have a crippling turnover at the worst possible time in all three of those games. And if that continues... like, that's how you lose a lot of close games. So we'll see if that can get a little bit under control.
And also, before we answer this question, I'm going to say it too. It's the same thing with the Patriots, how, like, the first game, the Devontae Parker interception. That's not an interception. That's a totally different game. Week two, Patriots did the same thing, but the Steelers shot themselves in the own foot. Patriots did the same thing with the Ravens yesterday. So there's a lot of teams you can apply that to. As for this question right here, Randy, I'm going to say it like this. I always believe this. I think it's like, you know, Dave Gettleman, they kind of, like, retired. It's like the classy way of having him go out. I don't think they're not going to fire him. They're not going to do anything. But if Seattle really wants to commit to this rebuild, I think it's a hearty handshake of like, hey, we know it's truly like mutual parting of ways, but they're going to treat it like give him his roses, give him his farewell tour. They'll send him out the right way, I believe. And also too, because Seattle, one underrated storyline, I would love to get Alex Larson, who I'm working on getting back on the podcast at some point to talk about this, is the situation with ownership, because ever since Paul Allen passed away, sister and Vulcan, I think it's Vulcan Incorporated, have kind of been holding them hostage, who actually, funny enough, shout out, own the Portland Trailblazers as well.
Yeah, that's right. The Allen family.
Yes.
And it could, well, to your point with Carroll, like, here's what I think is very true. I do believe that Carroll was, like, excited and enthusiastic about the season. And maybe right now, if you ask him, he would say, oh, I'm not interested in retiring, whatever. But if they do go 3-14, you know, because he's not used to that. He's not used to always losing every week.
Yeah. In the NFL.
And you could see a scenario where by December, he's just worn down and exhausted from like such a tough season. And he looks forward to next year and like maybe has to have a rookie quarterback in the building and like maybe thinks to himself, kind of like, it's not quite the same as Sean Payton because Sean Payton had a winning record last year, but something along the lines of, man, this team is like a few years away from getting back to contention. I'm 71 or whatever he is. He's the oldest coach in the league. I know that.
71.
Yeah, maybe it gets to a point where even if he's not feeling it right now, as the team continually disappoints him over the course of the year, maybe by the end he's just like, I just can't do this anymore. You know, like I really need to step away, mutual parting of ways. Maybe he's interested in going somewhere else, but at his age, I don't know. Like maybe he won't have that same motivation to do it.
Maybe the Bruce Arians route.
The Bruce Arians rumors about Bruce Arians?
No, root.
Oh, root. Yes. The retirement that is undone within a year or two. Very similar to Sean Payton.
No, I mean more in the sense of like he's still with the organization, but he's not the coach anymore. He's like a senior advisor or something like that. That's more that route. No. Not the 2018, I'm retired from the Arizona Cardinals, which ironically was after a game against Seattle.
The
2021, I'm on the sidelines somehow, Bruce Arians, that room, which still like, is a bullshit thing orchestrated by Tom Brady. You can't change my mind on that.
I don't disagree with you. And Carroll being like more of a, like more of a general manager role, like not as Schneider's job, but just like, you know, one of Schneider's like top lieutenants or something like that. And, well, because if they are going to be bad, and look, like things can still change. It's just like we talked about. You look at the landscape of the NFL and all the teams, like with the exception of like the Texans and the Bears, like, and it's a shame we keep saying this about the Bears, even though they're 2-1. With the exception of teams like that, you know, you don't really know, you don't really see a lot of like outwardly terrible teams. And if Seattle, even if they're competent, but if they're just like a little bit worse than everybody else and they're picking in the top of the draft, you know, rookie quarterbacks, are they going to be interested in doing that? Or are they going to be of the camp of let's get, you know, Jimmy G, let's get a Brady, not that Brady would do it, but you know what I mean? Like one of those other quarterbacks in the market, like, would they rather do that than start new with a rookie? Are they going to realize how far they are, or are they going to tell themselves, if we just get a competent quarterback in here, we'll be fine. So we'll see what they do.
Yeah. Another question I want to ask you right now, besides the obvious with India, a lot of people are trying to realize, hey, Frank Reich should be fired. Should it be a double package where Chris Ballard goes as well? Because I'm starting to think, yes, I know. I heard this as a joke on part of my take on Barstool, but I actually believe it, where the Andrew Luck retirement bought them years of job security where they can always go, oh, we're trying to replace Andrew. Oh, we're trying to replace Andrew, which I still look at that. That is one of the biggest what ifs, because I truly think he's a Hall of Famer if he does play a full career in the NFL. But that's just what if. That's an unfortunate reality of the league. But I think that more than we kind of saying, hey, Frank Reich could be on the hot seat this year, I think Chris Ballard is equally the same, because Mike Florio also said this. He said this, it's better to fire both than one or the other, because it's just that awkward, like, you know,
The transition.
He doesn't get to pick his
He doesn't get to pick his own guy. And they're kind of more so than almost any front office head coach combination in the league. Like, they've been very tied together this whole time. You know, they were brought in at the same time, I believe. Or no, Ballard, I think, came in the year before Frank Reich was hired, if I remember correctly. But then they were tied at the hip together from that point forward. And it's a shame, because you can understand the dilemma they're in, because Andrew Luck didn't just retire. Andrew Luck retired from a really good team. So they constantly have been replacing the quarterbacks with like stopgap options along the way. And the rest of the roster has been good. So they've been able to consistently, you know, make the playoffs or threaten to make the playoffs in the 3 years since then. So as a result, from their perspective, it's like, well, we didn't have the first overall pick. The roster was too good for that. So how could we have drafted the young quarterback of the future? The only thing they could have done, like, was get one of these guys that got moved in the trade market. But Deshaun Watson was never going there. The Texans were never trading him in the division. That was literally had a 0% chance of happening. So unless they maybe gotten the Russell Wilson race, but we see how that's worked out so far. It hasn't been that great. I'm kind of sympathetic to them. Like the Phillip Rivers, Carson Wentz, Matt Ryan experiments, I don't really know what else they could have done. So me personally, if I was the owner, I would give them more time. But I don't think Jim Irsay will. I think if they miss the playoffs, they're gone. Because Jim Irsay is impatient. Jim Irsay was mad at how they finished the year last year. So I do agree with you. They'll both be tied together. But, you know, the Colts, the way they beat the Chiefs, who's to say they can't, you know, do what they always do, you know? When go 9-8 or 10-7, 9-8 or 10-7, 9-8 or 10-7, do enough to get to the playoffs, lose in the wild card round, and then they, because if that happens, I don't think they would get fired. So,
which, fun fact, that's the last time the Bills won a one score game was in that wild card game against the Colts, which
the irony is the Bills used to be really good at winning one score games. That's what they did that whole season in 2020. And then lately, yeah, every time the game is close, they just lose. It's very strange.
Yeah, which I know we keep saying, like, look, them winning by double digits for 20 straight games, that's impressive on its own. But eventually, you got to win some close games, because that's what the playoffs are going to be. You're not going to blow people out in the playoffs every single game. No, this isn't the SEC. Randy, you're right. If Andrew Luck was still playing, because that's the other thing, too, with the Colts, they were never the same team after they got stomped by the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. And I don't know, that's where the whole Deflategate stuff started. But that was a 14-7 game at one point, and then the Patriots 31 unanswered.
And then, it took until that 2018 season. But that took 3 years. That took a new coach. That was already after Luck had started to get beaten down physically. Like, that's when the injury started, the O-line thing started. Because, like, the injury he had that finally knocked it, that forced him to retire.
It was a back thing, right?
Yeah, or shoulder or something. Yeah, it was something like that. But the point is, it wasn't – the injury itself wasn't that serious. It was that he was tired, mentally exhausted from always getting hurt, always having to rehab, always having to be on IR. Like, he just couldn't do it anymore. So the middle – those middle years – 2015, 2016, 2017, like that's what caused him to retire, was how miserable he was during that time span because he was always hurt, the team was not winning, and he couldn't deal with the constant injury recovery. So if that had changed, then maybe when that injury happens in 2019, he has a little bit more tolerance to be like, okay, I can go on IR for 7 games. It's no big deal, you know, as opposed to being the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, I completely agree. I also something that just came into my head, because Danny asked me this on Twitter, I think a week or two ago. He asked me, you have one game. Who are you starting? Prime J.J. Watt? And I want people in the question in the comments, Randy and Phil and Twitch as well, to answer this. If you had, you have to pick one defender to start in their prime in a playoff, in a game, it could be a playoff game, must-win regular season game, whatever. Are you starting Prime J.J. Watt or Prime T.J. Watt? Like 2013, 2014,
I think J.J. Watt. I think people forget how dominant J.J. was back then. Like in 2014, J.J. Watt finished second in the MVP race. Like T.J. Watt finally won Defensive Player of the Year last year. You could argue he deserved to win it the year before, but Watt has won the award 3 times. Watt was being compared with Lawrence Taylor. Like, I know they played different positions, but just generally, like, that era of, like, NFL lore, like what Aaron Donald's going through right now. T.J. Watt is great, and people hold J.J. Watt's injuries against him. But, one, a lot of those were in the back half of his prime. He played a lot during that 2012 to 2014 run when he was truly dominant. He rarely missed games. So I don't think that's meaningful. And you're also seeing that T.J. Watt has a similar injury propensity as well, as you're kind of unfortunately seeing right now, and you saw a little bit last year where he tied that sack record despite missing 4 games. So I think J.J. Watt at his peak was a little bit better. If you want to argue that T.J. Watt is a slightly more dominant like pass rusher, maybe, but I think we forget how good J.J. was at that time, because J.J. was getting sacks, he was getting tackles for loss, he was getting passes defensed at the line of scrimmage, he was getting, there was a stat, I think it was the 2012 season, that counted how many total stops you had. And the total stop stat is everything. It's anything that breaks a play. A PBU, a tackle, a sack, a pressure that forces an incompletion, whatever. J.J. Watt was number one in the league in that stat, and the 9 players behind him in that stat were all linebackers. Like, he was just so dominant and around the ball so often, he was getting tackle totals different from every other defensive end in the league. So, yeah, I would say J.J. still to this day.
I went J.J. too. I first of all like T.J., but then I think about it. You look at J.J.'s numbers. One thing that comes to mind is the photo with him with like the bloody, just bludgeoned up nose running down, the war paint dripping down his face. I want to get to Randy's point too, because this is a bit of a Patriot thing. But and one thing I always say that was stupid, but 2012 Monday Night Football, they decided to run into Foxborough wearing varsity jackets.
The varsity jackets.
That was, they lost 42-14. But that defense, too, you had him, you had Whitney Merciless, you had Brian Cushing, you had Connor Barwin, you had, I think Kareem Jackson was one of their defensive backs at that time.
He was.
The Houston Texans from the 2010s were one of the, like, those best. They're in that same category as, like, the Phillip Rivers Chargers, not the 06 Chargers, because that team's a complete outlier. But they're all in that category of they just could not beat the Patriots.
And they were very consistent week to week. Like, in 2000, I think it was 2009. Or 2011. No, let's say 2011. 2011. Yeah, 2011 is when Matt Schaub got hurt and T.J. Yates stepped in, and they still won.
I remember this.
Even with T.J. Yates. And 2009, they were like a playoff team that didn't make the playoffs because of that stupid Jets. Danny knows this. When Peyton Manning and the Colts punted the game against the Jets in week 16.
I remember that.
The Colts were 14-0 at that time. They could have had an undefeated season if they wanted to, but they would rather take the last 2 weeks off to prepare for the playoffs. And them doing that against the Jets is what got the Jets in the playoffs at 9-7. And the Texans were the team that got bumped out, because the Texans would have been in the playoffs otherwise. Would they have had that run that the Jets had? I don't know. but it would have been interesting to see. And what the Texans did during that era was very dominant. But it just, when Matt Schaub's arm started to deteriorate in 2012, it just fell off a cliff. And the that's where the very next season they were just like historically terrible before and got Gary Kubiak fired.
Yeah, he was also in the NFL for quite some time after that as Matt Ryan's backup in Atlanta.
Yeah, and the Ravens' backup too.
Yes. With this one right here, I think I don't want to say yes with Georgia. I'm going to go to college for a second. I know Miami had their little slip up against A&M. I know A&M needed to get the bounce back after losing to App State. There's something about Ohio State I just like. I've said this since like the summertime that I like the Buckeyes. I don't know what it is. I like Georgia. It's just when you look at Ohio State, you look at Bama. I think basically the college football playoff picture is going to be Georgia, Bama, Ohio State, and like one other team. Like it's going to be – we could see two Big Ten teams there. We could. But I think if Clemson wins the ACC convincingly, Clemson will be the fourth team.
Now Clemson, you know, my Hurricanes unfortunately got historically embarrassed this past weekend, losing to Middle Tennessee State 45-31. So not that they were like going to be a playoff team or anything, but I did think they were a threat to maybe pick off Clemson. And now I'm kind of, you know, cowering away from that stance, as one would when you get your ass beat to that level of difficulty. But I'm with you. I would not discount Michigan. They haven't just like been winning. But
barely beat Maryland, though.
They did, and they didn't cover. They were 17-point favorites and didn't cover. But
they whooped the schools they should whip.
And even though they play Ohio State, the thing is, if they and Ohio State are undefeated going into that game, Michigan can lose that game and then still make the playoff. Much like all those years where Alabama, I think it was 2017. Yeah, 2017, where Alabama lost to Auburn the last week of the season and made the playoff anyways.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so like you could see a world like that if some of those other top-tier teams like don't hold up their end of the bargain and start losing games that they shouldn't lose. Like I'm personally really high on Ohio State myself as well, but still I think it's going to – like we'll see because like some of these other contenders I'm just not super high on. Like USC's defense has been really bad. And it was fine, I guess, this past weekend, only giving up 14 points. But their metrics before that week were very concerning. So I don't know if they're quite at that level. I think that's asking too much out of Lincoln Riley in 1 year. And Oklahoma has shown some good things, too. They beat the hell out of Nebraska, a lot better than the rest of us thought.
I mean, Nebraska sucks, but
they do, but still. So they're an interesting team to watch, but I think Michigan's been very, very dominant. They deserve some respect. And the last thing I'll say on the SEC, Bama, do not be surprised if Bama loses this weekend. They play Arkansas, and I know Arkansas just lost to A&M, but Arkansas, historically under Sam Pittman, they always cover. They always play teams tougher than they're expected to. They played Bama really tough last year in Tuscaloosa, only losing by a touchdown. Treylon Burks went nuclear against Bama's cornerbacks. This game is in Arkansas. Much like how Bama last year lost to Texas A&M at Texas A&M, after Texas A&M had lost to Arkansas the week before, this week you could see a flip. This time Arkansas loses to A&M, and then they may get Bama a good spot this week. Bama's 17-point favorites. They're projected to roll. But just knowing how college football works, Bama historically under Bryce Young and Nick Saban, they play a lot of close games. They should have gotten picked off by Texas. Last year, they should have lost like three times before that Georgia National Championship game.
Auburn.
They should have lost to Auburn. They did lose to A&M. They had a tight game. I think it was against LSU, I want to say. Oh, no, in Florida. Florida. That was the other one. They only beat Florida by like 2 points. And Florida's offensive line dominated their defensive line that game. So I just think they can't keep getting away with this. And Bama, Tennessee also, don't ignore them too, because I'm not saying Tennessee or Arkansas is going to win the SEC or take Bama's spot in the playoff, but I think Bama could lose one of those two games. And then if that happens, then Bama and Georgia maybe both don't get in this year. So that'll be interesting.
It's gonna be an interesting race. And you also just gave Matt Beasley like the biggest boner of his life. So I'm just going to completely ignore that part of it. But no, it's college football this year. There's parity too because I feel like there's so many good schools. Yeah. USC. I look at the game October 15th against Utah. I look at that game right there. That's gonna be a game where we're truly gonna see how good are the Trojans because I know Utah lost to Florida. Utah's still got a really good team. Cameron Rising is a really good quarterback. Before I get to Randy's next question about the Pro Bowl, just a quick update on the fantasy league and how everything's doing. First of all, I'm getting my ass kicked by Danny this week. I had a bad week. Dog Pound North is beating Jonathan Taylor, Thomas Fangirl, which is Andy McNamara, beating Chris Ramey. Orthodox Judy, which is Matt Lorenzo, is beating Matt Beast. Bobby Gross is beating Joe Miller, noted Bills fan, the OG Bills fan who was supposed to be on here with us, but then Greg kindly stepped in, and Greg will be another Bills fan that's always welcome back on the show. And Pat Lane is going to beat Alex Lorenzo, who Pat Lane is Path Perfect Team, and Alex Lorenzo is Hunter Hurst Henry, which I feel like is a play on
Triple H.
Next week, I am playing Matt Lorenzo. Joe Miller is playing Pat Lane, so a little Bills-Pats action. Danny's, whose team name is, my name is Jeff Erson, is taking on Jonathan Taylor, Thomas Fangirl. Dog Pound North is taking on Hunter Hurst Henry, and the Acclaimed is taking on Matt That's Who. For anyone who wants to know, the Acclaimed is Bobby. Randy, it's great. The Pro Bowl is actually exciting now. The only thing I'm going to say is, and I agree with this, Jason Kelce came out with a statement.
About food eating competitions?
Let the linemen eat against Joey Chestnut. Let it happen.
I think it's going to be fun. I think it could be the kind of thing where there might have to be some tweaks. You know, maybe the first year they make some mistakes. You know, they have a competition that wasn't as cool as they thought it would be. There's another competition that's more lopsided. And maybe it's next year's where you really start to actually get see them get into a groove a little bit and have a better skills competition. But it is exciting. It's a change of pace. It's something new. And look, for those, like, as much as everyone complained about the Pro Bowl for years, everyone always ignored that it was always, like, very highly rated. It was always very successful. Kids love that game, man. Kids love getting to see all the All-Stars play together. Even if, to the rest of us football fans, it's like, this is not real football. What the hell are we doing here? So I understood them keeping it the way it was for so long because it was a commercial success as much as, like, our section of the internet would bitch about it. It was commercially successful. But now, hopefully, we get the best of both worlds. Now we're happy, and hopefully the kids are happy, too. So hope it goes well.
Yeah, we hope it goes well. The first year, I do expect hiccups. I like that it's in Vegas. I would never want to see it go back to being the week after the Super Bowl because do we really want to end our NFL season on the Pro Bowl as the last game? No, we want to end it with that bad girl, Barbados' own Rihanna in Phoenix, which I have to say right now is much better than Taylor Swift. I saw a photo yesterday on Twitter where it was Taylor Swift was Jared Goff and the Rams and then Rihanna's Matt Stafford, which, look, all of us know Rihanna. All of us listen to her song. She grew up in our day. I'm 93, Big Rat's 94. We all grew up with her, so it's going to be exciting. But with the Pro Bowl, you know what? It'll be worth tuning into. It'll be worth tuning into. And also, to the fact that it's Vegas, you got to make it destination worthy for not only the fans but the players.
Yeah,
like the draft you can kind of have wherever. Like, honestly, the draft this year's in Kansas City. 2024 it's in Detroit, which hopefully I get to go to. But as a whole, I'm happy with the Pro Bowl. I'm happy with the way the season's been so far. Also, we have a 3-0 vote because on the Twitch stream, Ultimate Fantasy Sports, who is basically helping sponsor this event tonight, voted for Prime JJ. So that's 3-0 for JJ. But anyway, guys, Big Rat, been a blast. Folks, I know it sucks, but we got to get out of here. We were only here for the first half. That's all we were given. We're going to go watch the second half of this game. I'm going to get the audio portion of this uploaded. But Big Rats, always welcome on here. Randy, Phil, anyone in the Twitch comments, thank you very much for getting involved. This is a huge success, guys. After 3 years of doing this, I finally got to do something really, really cool. Big Rat and I got to incorporate the game in it where it's a very boring 6-3 football game right now. Yeah. But you know what? That's just what it is. And I'm gonna let you talk for a bit before I sign off.
Oh man, the Danny Dimes games never disappoint. This might be the last one if it goes in this direction. We'll see.
Franchise tag of Joe Shane, do it.
We'll have to create a new tradition off of it. But no, I had a great time. Was happy to help out. This was a blast. And yeah, excited to yell at Danny next week. It'll be a fun time.
It'll be a fun time, folks. Anyway, guys, join us for episode 185 on Wednesday. Like I said, it should be McGarvin Patriots POV. I will confirm that on the Twitter sphere tomorrow. But anyway, guys, next week, you heard it here first. Danny, Big Rat, myself, we're going to be here talking football. We're going to get other people on the show too, guys, because guess what? We're at episode 184, but we're just getting started. Have a great night, folks. Enjoy the rest of the game. Hopefully you enjoyed week 3 of the NFL season, and we'll see you guys back here later this week.
Do, did, will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.